Hello, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Therapy Room podcast. My name is Erin Bruner. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the clinical director of the Therapy Room.
I am Megan Dasbeck. I'm a licensed mental health counselor and the outreach lead.
I'm Christina Myers, and I'm a registered mental health counselor intern.
The Therapy Room podcast is a podcast about learning the ins and outs of mental health, how it applies to you individually and our society as a whole. We'll be sharing some education and experiences that we've gained on our journey as therapists, and hopefully you'll gain something from our podcast along the way. On today's episode, we'll be discussing the mental load. I picked this topic. something that has been a big topic in the mental health world in recent years. We'll be talking about what the mental load is exactly, who it affects most, and how we can lessen the mental load on our partners. So grab a coffee, get comfy, and welcome to the Therapy Room. Welcome. So what exactly is the mental load, guys? Does anyone have an idea of what the definition is? This is like a new, I think it's like a new social media phenomena is what I say.
Yeah. We've heard a lot about it from 2020 on, a lot more prevalence of it being discussed. A lot of times when I hear it, it's all of the things I have to do in my head without having to say them, that are all the expectations, planning, preparing, prioritizing, organizing your thoughts to get all of these tasks done without even needing to say it out loud, and it not being considered workload really before, even though it takes a lot of brain power to get all that stuff done.
Yeah. I always say it's like my ongoing to-do list.
Yeah.
It never turns off, though. It never ends. There's never an end point. It's always there.
Yeah.
But it pre-2020, it just felt like that's what was supposed to happen. And I feel like during the pandemic, people went to social media and said, why is this happening? There's so much going on my plate. And everyone was like, oh my God, me too, girl, me too. And we're all like, oh, this is a thing. So I found a couple definitions doing some research that I think really encompass it. And it is exactly what you're saying, Megan. It's the thinking, planning, and organizing and emotional work of keeping a family and a home running. And who would think about the emotional work of keeping a home running pre-2020? It was just what you did. So in doing some research, I found that like this is really based in feminist theory. This is something that's been talked about for a very long time, just in different words. In the 80s, it was studied by sociologists. It was called the domestic load, and it really focused on how women have more work, if you will, at home than their male partners do, if we're talking about like heteronormative couples. And it really just focused on the more physical labor. I found this really interesting, kind of, I don't wanna say where it started, but this artist named Emma made a like blog comic around 2018, and it was literally called The Mental Load, and it depicted these scenes. There's one called The Mental Load and one called like She Should Have Just Asked, or you should have just asked. And it depicts this mother who invites her friend over for a drink or whatever, and she's in the kitchen getting the kids ready for dinner, and she's like, oh, just hang on one second, honey. And her husband's just sitting there talking to the friend, and the woman's running around the kitchen just chaotically, and the pot starts to overboil, and the husband is like, what happened? What's going on? Why didn't you should have just asked me for help? And she's like, are you kidding me? I'm doing everything. You were just sitting there. And I really think that's where it took off as a social media phenomena was like, we all connected with that of you're just enjoying your glass of wine. I invited my friend over and I'm doing 100 things that you didn't think about. I think that was something we all can agree on. We're all different levels of momming in this room. We all experience that. But it doesn't just encompass being a mom, correct?
Yeah.
So what do you guys see when you're working with clients, who this affects or how it affects people? Because we're talking a lot about women, but what does that look like outside of being a mom?
I this is kind of a silly reference, but I've been rewatching Mad Men lately, which takes, but hear me out, because it takes place in the 60s and it's like throughout the whole decade. I think they go into the early 70s. But I remember watching it with my mom when it first came out, who she was born in 51. So she, you know, graduated high school in 1969, which was like, you know, she went to Woodstock, all of that stuff, like this cultural revolution. And I remember watching it with her and I'm like, there's no way women were really treated this way. There's no way ads literally said, your husband won't love you anymore if you don't clean the house right. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh yes, they did. That was your expectation as a wife, as a partner. Well, not a partner, like you weren't really considered a partner, but as a wife and a housewife and a mom, those were your jobs. You're supposed to be beautiful. The house is supposed to be perfect. And your man is supposed to come home and never have to worry about a thing.
Yep.
And I think hearing what you're saying with the 80s, we look at that time frame of the women's revolution, women getting into the workforce in the late 70s. That's where imposter syndrome started being, was discovered, that it's this phenomenon of women feeling like imposters because they kind of were, like, for the first time they're in this new arena. And how so much of our conditioning societally has been, how do you support someone else? Not how do you exist as an entity, but how are you to be a support system? So I feel like in that context, you know, that's kind of what the generation after generation has taught young girls. We are to create a space that's more comfortable for other people. So we think about everything in that way. Now, again, it's not necessarily universal. Like, there are men, of course, experience it, you know, like, it doesn't have to be, you know, binary with genders either. But I feel like when we look at the evolution of the United States, so much of it is tied to what those historical roles have been and how that's kind of been generation to generation taught.
Yeah.
Those are your jobs. That's just what you do.
And I think when we talk about our generation of mothers, we're in this realization of, I want to do all of the things, but I want a partner.
Yeah.
A partner, not just a husband.
Yeah.
There's so much more to marriage than having a beautiful wedding.
Yeah.
And being in love with somebody. There's a partnership that goes into it. And I think for me personally, specifically after having kids, I realized how much more went into partnership than just marriage. It's fine and dandy when you don't have your little lovely
kiddos,
sweet little angels, cherubs running around crazy tearing apart the house.
Yeah,
you know, it's easy to just maintain when it's just you and one other person. When you add the other little ones to the mix, the mental load becomes overwhelming
because you're not only having to worry about your husband with, you know, worrying about him coming home and thinking the house is clean, but you're also having to worry about your kids, how they're doing in school, what's going on with them at the time. It's just, it's a lot. It's overwhelming. So
one of the research articles that I found that was defining the mental load, and they were doing research on it, that there were three areas that helped define it. It was invisible, without boundaries, and never ending.
Oh, wow.
Oh, doesn't that hurt to hear out loud?
Yeah.
So it's invisible because it takes place internally. It's that ongoing to-do list that never ends, but it results in added physical labor. I have to go run to the store because we're out of milk, which I have to do today. and all of those things. So it's this, it's the invisible labor before the labor.
Yeah.
It's without boundaries. It exists at work, during personal time, as we're getting ready for bed, as I'm trying to wash my hair.
Yeah.
It doesn't only happen in one location of our home, of our lives. And like I said, it's never ending. That to-do list doesn't, there's no check mark at the end. I just keep on adding more and more and more to it.
And the guilt you feel if you were to take a moment for yourself, because you know it's never ending, so you feel like it's irresponsible to not think about it. I had a client one tell me, I really appreciate it because I've had this thought before too. She's like, if I don't worry about it, who will? Like, it's your job to be on top of all of those things.
Yes.
Self-assigned or not, but she's like, if I don't worry, then who will? So that's a great point.
Yeah, who's going to worry about the kids? Who's going to worry about dinner? Who's going to worry about the house being clean?
What's going to fall through the cracks if I don't worry about it?
Right.
I always talk to clients about this too. I think specifically as a lot of women, we want to be in charge. Anxious girlies, right? I want to be in charge. I want to be in control. But that doesn't mean that I don't need help with some of these tasks. So I compare it to like being the household manager. Mm-hmm. I want to be the household manager. I don't want to be the only employee in the household, though.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. How, when you think about working with clients, what are some of the examples that when your client's talking, you're like, that's the mental load?
My favorite is always, I don't want to have to ask you. I want you to just know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Why do I have to tell you what I need help with? Can't you see it?
We want them to be mind readers.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
No, I want you to be an observer. If there's dishes in the sink, I don't have to tell you that.
Yeah.
Our clients, no one should have to say that. If there's dishes in the sink, the dishes have to be washed.
Yeah.
Because we eat off of dishes and we eat them every day because we need food to live, you know?
I think a big issue is differences in expectations of the home too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know as an anxious girly myself and a bit of a control freak, if there's a dish there, I'm going to wash it right now because I don't want to think about it later.
Mm-hmm.
For James, he's like, I'll get to when I get to it. It's a dish. And so it's not fair for me to be upset with him because it doesn't fit my timeline if he's still willing to do the task. So I feel like that's a hard one for a lot of couples with communicating is, okay, is it my standard that's getting in the way of this, or can I compromise too? Because I struggle to compromise. I'm like, but just do it my way.
Well, it's the time frame, but it's also how you do it. Yeah. Like, okay, I need to mop the floor or whatever. Okay. Or sweep the floor, whatever it is. It's not up to my standard. So he did it, but it's not the way I like it. So I have to redo it.
Or,
you know, those same things too.
That brings up weaponized incompetence for me, because I have this conversation with my clients all the time. Was the task done correctly, or was it done the way that you want it to be done?
Yeah.
The example I always use is the dishes. I think that there is a right and a wrong way to load the dishwasher, and this is a hill that I'm obviously willing to die on. But when the dishes are done, does everything come out clean? Are all of the cups slipped over full of dirty water? That is a task that is done incorrectly. I cannot give my children a cup that's dirty. I don't want to eat out of a plate that's dirty. If it's loaded incorrectly, if you don't put dishwasher pods in there, the dishes are no longer done. That task is not completed. If it's not perfectly organized the way that I like it and prefer, because it makes sense, obviously, that is not doing the task wrong. That's doing the task the way I don't like it. So when we talk about weaponized incompetence, it's this idea that specifically when we're talking about partners, that partners intentionally do a task incorrectly to weaponize it against you so that they no longer have to do that task. Yes. So intentionally loading the dishwasher, you know, incorrectly.
Yeah.
Right.
And now all of the cups are full of dirty water. That's weaponized incompetence. We're all adults. If you are in a marriage, you are usually of legal age to be married. If you're having children, you have a lot of responsibilities, tasks. These are simple tasks. And even if they weren't learned in childhood, we all have Google at our fingertips every single moment of every single day.
I will say something I've appreciated a lot. And I keep talking about James, but he's been an amazing example of this. The millennial dad and this complete rebrand of, they want to be equal partners. There's a lot of, you know, the generation and younger where it's like, no, I want to have a fulfilling relationship with my kids. I don't want to be on the back burner. I want my children to know that I love them and I support them. And they have to do a lot of reimagining what that looks like too. It's a lot of work when maybe you didn't have that relationship with your father where he was very distant or absent because the expectations were so different. Like, I keep going back to the generations, but like if you weren't taught those skills and then you're trying to navigate it yourself, that it's like speaking two different languages and trying to find a way to connect to each other where I feel like there's a lot more drive and interest now than maybe prior generations where they want to be part of those conversations, but might not know how to create that.
Exactly. It wasn't modeled for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always say we do better. We know better. We do better. Our parents knew better and did better, but we know better and do better than them.
Yeah.
And our kids will know better and do better than us. But if there's no model, how do our partners know?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think all of our partners, even my clients who share with me, I'm like, yeah, they're trying to show up, but maybe they're lost in this. Maybe that's why these conversations are so important, is to say, hey, the mental load is invisible. You don't see it because I'm taking care of it. Mm-hmm. So how do we talk to our partners, or how do we talk to our clients about how to talk to their partners about this mental load? Because it's invisible. It's typically falling on the mom in these situations.
Yeah.
So how do we have these conversations? Because I find when I have these conversations with my clients, my mom clients specifically, there's anger.
Yeah.
There's frustration.
Resentment.
There's, why on earth wouldn't he know to just do the dish that was in the sink? That doesn't make any sense. And I think we can all agree, coming to your partner in anger about something isn't going to fix it.
It makes the situation worse.
Yeah. Way worse, yeah.
So I'm going to kind of hate myself a little bit, and I feel like there will be anger towards me about this, but I say it genuinely from my own heart too. If it's something that I always think of it as, I've done all this so you never even have to worry about it. So if you've never had to worry about it, then why would you think about it? And is it fair for me to hold an expectation of you to do something that you never even knew was a problem? So yeah. I feel like we have to open ourselves to the option of communicating more about, hey, because like my first go-to is always, why don't you just know? And mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of moms and clients have related that too. It's like, well, I don't want to have to ask you. I don't want to have to tell you. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of like expecting someone to learn how to speak a new language without any modeling or experience, like immersion with zero understanding of, you know, what the language is or what the culture is. So I think to heal some of that anger and resentment, we've got to give people a chance to know what we need and what we expect. And then kind of like, is it wrong or is it just different? Mm-hmm. Open ourselves to the possibility, okay, maybe that's not the way I would do it, but is it still getting done and is it working?
Yeah.
But I feel like we have to open ourselves up to the potential of having the conversation, which when you're feeling really resentful can be hard. You feel like you're kind of past that point. Mm-hmm. How do you deal? I guess that's a good point. How do you deal with the anger and resentment if it's already been building for quite some time?
That's a beautiful question. I think one, we have these open conversations. We say to each other, like, I am so frustrated about this. But again, how do I hold my partner accountable for my frustration if I've never said, why aren't you just putting the dishes in the dishwasher? And it goes back to what Christina was saying about mind reading. They can't read our minds. If I have this expectation of how cleaning, we keep on focusing on chores, but how cleaning is done in the home, and I don't share that with my partner, he can't know that. So I think it acknowledging it first, sitting with it, allowing the anger to be there, because we're allowed to be angry mm-hmm. about this, but coming to our partner with openness and genuine, like, this is a frustration that I have and I need to talk to you about it. And I also think we want to make a plan in that moment because we've processed it. Our partners need a chance to process it too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just because we've been thinking about it for so long, this is a new thought for the other person. Mm. I think that's another thing that kind of comes with the emotional workload. In those traditional heteronormative relationships, women typically pre-think about the implications. It's a lot of internal processing before something comes out in conversation. So you've got a whole script prepared and they're hearing it for the first time. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, you need to give me a second to process mm-hmm. this.
And then we don't like that they want to process it.
mm-hmm. Just or their initial reaction is very negative, very defensive. Yeah. I do help around the house. I hear that all the time.
Sure.
And they do, but perhaps your mental load and your domestic load is much higher than what your partner recognizes.
Yes.
And they need time to process that and see that.
I think it would really hurt my heart if my partner were to come up to me and say, like, I do everything and you're not really helping, because mm-hmm. they would make me question my capabilities. And okay, so I'm a burden too. You know, like mm-hmm. we want to try and avoid attacking each other, even though it might feel good in the moment mm-hmm. To get that frustration out. I feel like in couples therapy, a lot of times we work on what are the foundational components of our relationship. What does the role look like for each person? Mm-hmm. How do you think the division of labor should go in your house? Yeah. What are things that you feel more comfortable with versus your partner? And just having a really genuine conversation about, hey, this is what I experienced. These are things I wouldn't want to do. These are things that I really would like to do. What do you feel about it? And have a genuine conversation about what your expectations of a home are, because that's another thing we don't really get taught except for what's modeled and what's mm-hmm. experienced. All of a sudden you move in with somebody, or, you know, especially after having kids, like yeah. people can tell you what it's like, mm-hmm. but it's nothing like that because every person has a very different experience. And so you go into this new endeavor and being able to get back to basics and say, okay, this is what I was hoping for. These are some things I feel like I'm not getting, or these are things that I would like to have more of, mm-hmm. and check in with each other about it instead of sitting there festering, you know, because it's really easily turns into deep-seated resentment, which mm-hmm. can really destroy a relationship.
Absolutely. Isn't that one of the horsemen in couples? Mm-hmm. Is being resentful?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the checking is what's bringing that up for me. We talk about, you know, when you get into a new relationship, setting expectations and boundaries and all of that. But each stage of life brings new challenges. Why isn't that the set norm that each stage of life we have these conversations of what, well, now we have this new challenge. We have this new baby. I'm trying to figure it out. What are the obstacles that we're facing now? What worked 4 years ago is yeah. not going to work today.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be more normalized in our conversations with our partners. That it was great that I cooked dinner and then you did the dishes pre-kids. Well, now there's kids and they're running around. I don't have time to cook a full meal, let alone wash the dishes afterwards. Yeah. We have to figure out what works for each person in new stages of life, new jobs. Obviously kids are a big one, but even as we grow older and our mentality changes on certain things and our preferences change, I think we have to be open to have these conversations with our partners.
Yeah. Everything is always evolving. I think that's another like societal implication we got, you know, with like the Disney princess era of, we had like Snow White and Cinderella where mm-hmm. the miracle was falling in love, getting married, and then everything's happily ever after. There's not always a lot of discussion about what relationships are supposed to look like after that, which I think is it's an evolving thing where we're seeing a lot more discussion about, yeah, a relationship's an organic thing that needs love and attention and growth, and it changes. Mm-hmm. And through those expectations, you have to be able to come back to each other and reconnect on, hey, this is a need that's not being met for me, or I could really use the support. You know, it's us versus the problem, not us versus each other. Oh, and if you start feeling like it's me versus you, we got to check in because there's something mm-hmm. off here, because it's us together. We are the team. So what do we need to feel like we can finish this problem or address it? Not when that resentment starts creeping in, that's like a real big red flag of, hey, mm-hmm. there's something that's not being, a need not being met that we need to work on together instead of me harboring it against mm-hmm. you. Because that's a tough, like I said, it's a tough place to come back from.
Sure is.
Yeah.
One of the things I talk to my clients about a lot that I use this too. I saw this on TikTok. Let's be real. when we have these societal norms that I think, and women think, okay, well, I have to be in charge of this. I have to be in charge of that. A common thing that we say to our partners is, hey, can you help me get the kids ready? Hey, can you help me unload the dishes? Hey, can you help me with dinner? Mm. All three of those examples, though, are mutual tasks. Those are tasks that are both parties in a marriage should be responsible for. It's not something that is for me. It's not, hey, can you help me make copies at work? You
it's
know,
not a it's favor. Not. It's nothing yeah. that's
for me. It's for the family and the household. Ah, so I challenge people to say, hey, can you help with, or hey, the dishes need to get done, can we do them together, instead of, hey, can you help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
As a mom of boys, I work on this too. Yeah. So my toddler son, when I need help with the baby, I'll say, hey, can you get mommy some diapers? That has nothing to do with my son. He doesn't benefit from getting me diapers. They're not cleaning up his toys. It's not something that he's responsible for. It's a favor for me. So I word it as, can you help mommy and get those diapers for mommy? Because it's a favor for me. When he needs to clean up his toys, I say, hey, buddy, it's time to clean up your toys. How can I help you with that? What do you need? Can we do this together? Instead of, can you help mommy clean up your toys? Yeah. It's not mommy's mm-hmm. job to clean up his toys.
And that subtlety of phrasing makes all the difference mm-hmm. to... This is what, as a growing human being, these are things that you'll have to do and you need to learn and mm-hmm. have that behavior modeled for you. And what a beautiful way to reframe that this is a responsibility that is of all people, mm-hmm. not just moms, not yep. just me, but something that you should be able to do too. My kids are older and we've been trying to do a lot of that. Well, they can handle putting their own laundry in laundry baskets. They can hang their clothes back up. What are the tasks that we can start dividing up? Mm-hmm. Because as part of a four-person house with a crazy amount of animals, we need all hands on deck. So yeah. This is what happens. Like, that's kind of how we word it. In our family, we need everybody to participate. So if mm-hmm. you guys can, make sure you put your stuff in the dishwasher afterwards. You know, clean up your spot. Make sure if you get something out, put it away. For me as a control freak, it's been very hard not to just do it because I think, oh, I just want you to have fun and have this like carefree childhood. But yeah. It's been reframed mm-hmm. for me. Those are skills that will be important. Mm-hmm. And so you're mm-hmm. robbing them of the opportunity to build those skills. So it's turned into this for us to be a family that runs a house together. I need your help with these things. If you can mm-hmm. handle that, I can handle this. And our teamwork is what makes it go. And so that the teamwork idea has worked really well for us.
I like that. I was going to ask, how do we talk to our clients? How do we talk to anybody who's on the more controlling side, who I like it done a certain way and I want it to get done?
Mm-hmm.
Which again goes back to weaponizing competence. I can't tell you how many clients have told me, well, my kids are supposed to mop up or load the dishwasher or whatever, but they always do it halfway wrong. And I'm like, they're seeing how much they can get away with because they know you're going to come back and do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the realization of like, oh my God, my kid's old enough. They know what to do. Or my partner knows what to do because we have had those conversations.
Yeah.
And the realization of like, okay, I have to, when we're talking about kids specifically, set firm in my boundaries of this is your chore. This is how you properly do that chore. I'm managing my expectations of I want it done this way versus it's done properly. The chore is not done until you've done it properly.
Yeah.
And holding them accountable to that. But how do we talk to our clients about that who want to be in charge of all of the things, like putting our kids' laundry away, because it's much easier for us to do it. This is what everyone says. It's much easier for me to do it. It'll get done quicker than if I have my kids do it or my partner do it.
I think for me, the reframe of this is a short-term solution to a long-term problem of, mm-hmm. yeah, this will mm-hmm. make this chore easier for me right now, but it's going to be a continual problem. Mm-hmm. It's not fixing the root of it. So every time I go in, I'm doing this too, then they are not learning those accountability skills. They're not mm-hmm. learning the things they'll need to be functional people. So every short, and I think a lot of times with an overwhelming amount of emotional workload, we're just figuring out how to survive the day. You don't have the bandwidth to think about, oh, in 15 years, she's going to be a bad roommate. You know, like we're thinking about right now. But if you take the time to kind of prioritize that and think, okay, what are the long term? Are there natural consequences to this? We do mm-hmm. a lot of that. Mm-hmm. You don't put your laundry in the basket, it doesn't get washed.
Mm-hmm.
So that shirt you wanted to wear, you should probably put in the laundry basket.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very hard one for me because I'm like, I want you to have everything all the time. But no, it's important. We got to learn. If somebody's always going to fix everything for you, you don't learn the skills to do yourself. So I think that's really important. And I cannot remember her name, but there's a woman. She has this incredible TED Talk. It's called The Five Chairs. And she talks about the way we change our, it was from a nonviolent communication seminar she went to. And it's all about how we change subtle changes in mm-hmm. our language. And one of the ones she said is, do you want to have a relationship with this person or do you want to be right?
Ooh.
If you want to have a relationship, how much does it matter if you're right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be right, how much does the relationship matter? So I just thought that was such a great succinct way to be like, okay, mm-hmm. do the dishes need to be loaded mm-hmm. exactly how I want or are they clean and good enough?
Yeah.
And figuring out what those limits are for each of us individually of like, okay, do I want to take this off my checklist and give it to someone else and trust that they are capable mm-hmm. of handling this? Or do I want to be right? That's a hard one for us controlling folks because it can feel like a internal battle.
Yeah. And I think too, once we've had these conversations and we've set these expectations, we have to set boundaries within ourselves too, mm-hmm. as the household manager, that this person is in charge of this and they're going to get it done because I'm holding them to this expectation, because again, that's the long-term solution instead of the short-term solution of like, oh, I'll just do it.
Yeah. What do you notice with the couples that you've worked with? What do you notice about how they communicate with each other?
Well, the thing that we work on with my couples are definitely the love languages. So, like, understanding one's love language, like one's this acts of service, one's this words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. Like they're not solving conflict in the right way because they're not coming to each other with love in the right way.
Yeah.
So that's a big one for the, you know, couples that I work with.
That's a beautiful exploration of it. They've expanded it for the workplace. And so Amy and I, when we do consulting, mm-hmm. we've done that quite a few times where it's easy to be let down when somebody is not coming to you in the way that you choose to be approached.
Right.
But it's all completely nonverbal. It's this, mm-hmm. you know, oh, you let me down, but they'll never know they let you down. And they'll think yeah. they did a great job mm-hmm. because we're not expressing what the differences in those languages are. Another thing. Yeah. Like really got to come to it. Okay. If you're an acts of service person, mm-hmm. me telling you how much I love you is not going to necessarily mean as much as me taking the trash out or, you know, oh, yeah. and like learning one's not better than the other. We just, mm-hmm. how to appreciate the differences mm-hmm. in showing up for somebody else the way they need it.
Right. And I had one of my couples come in and said, like, they were working on acts of service and words of affirmation. And he turned to her and said, you know, you're making effort. Like, I can tell mm-hmm. you're making effort, but I need this from you. I don't want this. And that mm-hmm. was a huge eye-opener for her because she was like, we don't have that communication. He wouldn't have told me that outside of this. And I would, you know, now she knows what he needs mm-hmm. and all those things. And that makes a huge difference, the communication part of it, because it's makes a huge difference.
I would say that's a great, like the building blocks of how to communicate with each other. It's good code language for yeah. like, I need acts of service. Okay. That person will then know what that means. And mm-hmm. it's not a, you're not showing up for me. It's not a, me versus you, it's us versus the problem. This is mm-hmm. the formula I need to feel cared for. And for you, this is the right. formula you need. And so it's, okay, well, I know how to fix that then.
Yeah. And that takes the load off
yeah.
you because now they know that what you need. And that makes a huge difference in itself.
For sure. That's a great one.
And I think when our love language is acts of service and we're the mental load keeper, it's right. Even more detrimental when our partner can't see or understand that that's our love language need.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to communicate that.
Yeah.
I think the love languages are so important in all of this. Okay, so we've talked a lot about what the mental load is. It's history a little bit. We acknowledge it. Really, it's like a social media phenomena. But it's got us all talking, and we've talked about how it impacts our relationships. We've talked a lot about how we as the mental load keeper can communicate it with our partner and how they can show up differently. So what do you guys think is your like ending take on this? What is the next steps for moving forward with understanding the mental load? How do couples move forward? How do we as individuals move forward? How do we change this negative narrative and make it more positive, because it's very negative right now. Right, and I yeah. think that, you know, I always say this to people, whether I'm working with couples or individuals, like people get married because they want to be together forever. They love each other. So how do we change this from a negative to a positive? What do you guys think?
I think having the open communication mm-hmm. is like number one, because if you don't have that communication, then you don't know what's going on inside their head. You don't know what, you know, the other person needs. So having that genuine conversation, not coming with anger, and you know, you come with anger and mm-hmm. the other person might shut down. So having that open, genuine communication can do wonders. Yeah. It's like the first step.
I love that.
I can't remember if it's Gottman, but they say something about you need to have 7 times as many positive experiences for the negative ones.
Wow.
So if you find yourself, I get like that resentment, if you feel it, you notice it, you find yourself distancing from your partner because you're holding these feelings, that distance, I think, is always a really good clue of, hey, we really got to check in with each other, because we're thinking short term versus long term again. This is the person I've chosen to spend my life with, or, you know, whatever kind of relationship it is, like, you know, I'm choosing this person in this moment. I feel like I owe them the opportunity to know how I'm feeling and thinking, and I wish they would do the same for me. So if you can have that open communication, but also be present enough with each other to accept the feedback, mm-hmm. figure out what your ground rules for communicating with each other are. And that could be another podcast we talk about, like, you know, fair mm-hmm. fighting and figuring mm-hmm. out you know, if it's us versus the problem, what do we need to do to solve this problem? Mm-hmm. Really challenging those emotional reactions with logical things that will make things easier for each of you, and figure out what your expectations of a relationship are. Mm-hmm. Because we have them internalized and we assume everybody else feels the same way we do until they do something and we decide, oh, that's a value problem, mm-hmm. not a difference of experience.
Yeah, I definitely think we need a space to be able to share our frustrations in this like global experience in womanhood that we're having, of the mental load and how it's stressing us out, and giving a name to it really helped a lot of us. But like you guys are saying, at the end of the day, we have these partners for a reason, and we have to have that open communication, and our partners need to be open to hearing our concerns and our constructive criticisms that are going to be polite and well thought out. We're not going to go with anger, because we have our support system, and if we don't, we have a wonderful place we can go talk to wonderful therapists about our frustrations. And I think that moves it all forward. And I always say this to my clients, like, when you have children, you are modeling what a healthy relationship mm-hmm. is. And getting through these difficult times shows your children, this is how partners treat each other, and this is how they get through conflict. And that is the most important skill. And as a mom, that was the number one thing. I have to show my children how to do this through modeling. They can't learn it from a textbook. They're not going to learn it from a textbook properly. Yeah. We have this opportunity. We have to take it and show them what's right. Okay. Great conversation, guys. So Megan is doing our ending quote.
So we found this quote. It's from the book Fed Up, Emotional Labor, Women and the Way Forward by Gemma Hartley. And one of the quotes says, while women have spent the last few decades being encouraged to reach for the masculine ideal of success, being told they can become anything their hearts desire in the professional realm, they have not been relieved of any of the emotional labor that waits for them when they return home.
I think that recognizing our words today are fun, huh? I think recognizing that is so empowering. Yeah. And I think that's where some of the frustration stems from, is this empowerment. And we can have these conversations, this empowerment. And like we've been talking about, go to our partners with like kind and openness and healthy communication skills that we're going to learn from Megan and Christine in couples counseling.
I think what's like, when you get reframing that, what can I do to help, to recognizing it is a genuine interest in helping you and not wanting you to be mm-hmm. the only one with the burden. So let's take it as it is, instead mm-hmm. of, well, you should just know. Maybe they don't know. So what can I do? How can I express right. this in a way that will actively help me, because my partner wants to help me? Mm-hmm. And trying to reframe our thinking to that instead of our initial mm-hmm. response, which can be to, I'll tackle the laundry, you do the dishes. That would really help, I think, mm-hmm. our house workload. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And use your language of
our house, not me.
Not for me.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great reframe.
I love that, guys. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. So that's it for us here today. Thank you so much for partaking in this conversation with us. And if you have any thoughts or comments, share them with us on social media. We're always wanting to hear everybody's opinions and thoughts. I learn so much from each person I interact with mm-hmm. about their personal experiences, thoughts, anything. So please feel free. We're on all the social media platforms. We are also, you can listen to us anywhere now, including Apple, which, hooray, so exciting. Ben's amazing. He does everything. And so thank you for joining us here in this pretty vulnerable conversation. And we'll see you next time in the therapy room.